Hi everyone. It is early. It's before sunrise. It is about, what are we, 5:49 in the morning today. Just simply because it's a massive day. A lot of stuff going on, which I'm going to talk about in a moment. And there's something in my head that just seems to wake me up early when I know I've got a lot of stuff on. So I've been up for a couple of hours. You'll hear why as I get to sort of the end of this update about the blog post that I'm going to publish before I publish this thing, so you'll be able to read it by the time it goes live. Anyway, I am sitting here in my backyard at the moment. It's a really, really nice sort of time of day because you sort of get the sunrise. I do normally sit here with my coffee very early on because it's just a good sort of peaceful time. No kids are up, which is good. I use this time to sort of catch up on the emails and the Twitters and everything else that happens overnight because Australia is kind of asleep whilst most of the rest of the world is going. But anyway, this is what the start of the day looks like, and it starts here before most other places, so this is kind of a glimpse into the future. Anyway, be that as it may, let's jump into it. So this week I did a few different things, and one of the funny sort of unexpected things was I wrote this blog post. This was actually Friday last week. It was a Friday kind of blog post. I'm a bit conscious that on Friday people like to consume kind of more lighthearted fun stuff. Anyway, I did this blog post called "Reckon You've Seen Some Stupid Security Things Here, Hold My Beer." And by the way, the flickering, the glowing, for those of you watching the video, is I've got candles because I really don't have any better lighting, and everything behind me is starting to get really bright. So hopefully it's not too weird. All right, back to the beer. The beer post. So this was in reaction to a mate of mine, Lars. Lars posted this image of a password, or rather a logon screen. And the logon screen said, sorry, you can't, it might have been a register screen. It was fabricated, but anyway, it was like, you can't register with this password because this user, and it named the user, is already using it. And he tweeted that, I gave him an RT, and sort of half the responses I got were like, this is terrible, how could anyone ever do this? And half the other responses were, no, look, this is a scam or a joke. Here's the Reddit thread that explains it. And I was sort of lamenting in writing this blog post that, okay, someone put this together, but it is often really hard to tell what is a fabrication and what is actually a real stupid security thing. Because there is a lot of stupid security things out there. And I was like, just off the top of my head, I was going, well, there was this thing and there was that thing and the password reset thing there and the remember me function, all this crazy stuff. I should just dump a bunch of it in a blog post. And I did it. And, you know, look, I spent maybe a couple of hours just collating this stuff. And the funny thing about it is it's now one of the most popular blog posts I've ever written over the entire history of my blog, which kind of goes to show what it is that people want to consume. But look, that's cool. It's lighthearted and amusing. No one's going to learn particularly anything of absolute sort of practical use from it, other than to learn that we do some really, really screwy security things on the web, which you kind of knew, but seeing it there is one thing. So anyway, there's that. That was the stupid security things and the holding my beer. Now, another thing. I did my Security Sense column. And what's a subtle way of putting this? Our Australian government, perhaps our Australian Federal Police is more accurate, made a bit of a mistake with the way they're handling their metadata. Now, I spoke a little while ago about how we were doing mandatory metadata retention in Australia. And this is not dissimilar to other parts of the world where we said, look, because one day somebody might turn out to be a terrorist, we're going to need to try and store all of your things. So we're going to store all of your data. My wife has finally gotten up. We're going to store all of your data. And then one day, if you do turn into be a terrorist, we'll have your data and we can look at it. Now, to be clear, when I say all of your data, we are talking about metadata, data about data. And look, depending on what the channel of communication is, It's either quite revealing, so phone calls, which number is calling which number, which really is quite revealing. It does sort of establish your relationships. If it's internet, it turns out that internet is just like when you're connected to the internet, what IP address you got and when you disconnected. Now, of course, if you have IP addresses on the other end, you can line all those up. But anyway, I digress. The point was, we're storing this metadata. And at the time, I wrote about it and said, look, one of the things that we're all concerned about here is that sooner or later, this is going to be leaked or accessed in other ways that we didn't expect it to be. We got about 2 weeks. So we got about 2 weeks out of it before that did actually happen. And the news on Friday was that one of our AFP, our Australian Federal Police, improperly accessed a journalist's call records. Now look, in the grand scheme of things that you could improperly do with metadata, it could have been a lot worse. You know, we've seen cases before of jealous lovers in federal authorities looking up other people. That was one of the things from memory that came out about access to NSA data. Stuff like that, not so good. Now, I guess the problem here with the AFP is that in doing that, well, look at the light. I'm sure that'll be fine. The problem with the AFP is that in doing that, they did demonstrate that there is a lack of oversight in some places. So I guess the worry that everyone's had here is that this is the first illustration of what we all feared. So this is improper access to our metadata used in a way that we didn't expect it to be. Now, on the one hand, that's bad. Look, on the other hand, you kind of take a little bit of solace in the fact that it was such a significant thing that we had many police in uniform and government people, etc., standing up, making statements, disclosing it, and being transparent about it. And that, I guess the glass half full part of me is saying, hopefully this is an indication of how seriously they take metadata retention or the protection of metadata retention, such that whenever there is something which happens outside the scope of the way we're meant to access it, it just becomes a massive thing. I hope. Let's wait and see. It is a little bit early days. I'm still worried about the fact that at some point in time, we're going to have a leak and there's going to be a gazillion records exposed about things that are quite personal because there is data to be leaked. And incidentally, on that, I mentioned a couple of times, either on this particular channel or via my blog or via Twitter, I'm doing a course on GDPR. So this is the regulations that are coming into Europe next year about how you must handle personal data. And one of the really key things about GDPR is they talk about data minimization. And this is a really cool concept. Don't store stuff you don't need, right? Because if you don't store stuff that you don't need, then you can't lose stuff that you didn't really need. Now, conversely, when you store information, you always have the risk of it being disclosed. So sooner or later, someone may actually lose that data. And this is what we're worried about. All right, so that's enough on that security sense, losing our metadata. Now, something a bit different, change of flavor here. Microsoft Flow. So Microsoft Flow, I guess, is best described as a very similar sort of model to if this, then that, IFTTT. I've used that for quite some time, and it's been really cool, right? Because what you've been able to do is say, when an event happens with some sort of online service, then go and do something else with some sort of other online service. And really, this is kind of a recognition of, we've got a lot of different stuff in different services out there. Wouldn't it be cool if some of it could actually work together? So Microsoft have got their own implementation called Flow. And this is kind of neat in that, like if this, then that, you sort of drop into this interface where you can drag things like triggers. So what is an event that might happen to start my flow? You can have actions. So what am I going to do in the flow? And then there can be conditions, and as with IFTTT, plug into all sorts of other different services. I wanted to have a bit of a play with Flow because it just, first of all, seems like a cool idea. And second of all, I did have a valid use case where what I wanted to do is, with Have I Been Pwned, I get donations, which, by the way, is awesome. Thank you very much for that. And I get these donations come in, and to be honest, it's a little bit hard. It's impractical for me to go through and say to every single person that sends me a donation, thank you very much, thank you for taking the time. So what I do is I file them. And for the longest time, I've just gone file into a donations folder. Every now and then I flick through and have a look at what's come in, and that's it. And I thought, hey, what'd be cool is, what if I use a Microsoft Flow, not only to send them a thank you, but also to actually record who's sending me donations, because I really don't have much of a clue. And also to be able to go through and say, hey, look, if you are interested in this Have I Been Pwned thing and interested in security and interested in the things I'm creating, here's a link that'll subscribe you, and then you can get notifications when I blog. So I created a flow. In fact, I created two flows. And the way they worked is one of them has a trigger, which is a new email appearing in the donations folder of my Outlook mailbox. So this is my Outlook.com mailbox, Outlook as a service. So that was the trigger. And of course, being a Microsoft product and plugging into a Microsoft mailbox does all the funky authentication things you'd expect it to. So there's that trigger. And what it does is it picks up that mail and it takes the email. So this is the donation email that PayPal sends when someone sends a PayPal donation, which is where most of them come from, drops it in an Azure storage queue. Now this is cool because again, we've got good native sort of first class citizen integration with Microsoft things. Drops it in an Azure storage queue. That's all the flow does. Watch the mailbox, pick it up, drop it in a storage queue. Job done. Now, it does that. And then what I did is I created a web job within Have I Been Pwned that is triggered by an appearance. There's my notifications of what's going to happen today. By an appearance of the item in the storage queue. So it picks it up. Now I've actually got it in code. And once I got it in code, this is cool. I know code, right? So I can write stuff about what I want to do with it. So I was doing things like going, okay, well, look, let's go into there. We'll extract the PayPal transaction ID, which of course is unique for every transaction. Now that'll make sure I can make it item potent. If I see the same transaction ID come by later on, I'm not going to process it again. So for example, I screw up my flow or I get two emails from PayPal or something like that and it runs twice. I can drop that in a relational database. So now I can actually keep track of who sent me money and know who to thank. also know later on if ever I want to try and do more things for those who've donated. That's cool. So I can pick that up and I can then say, all right, well, look, for this person, are they subscribed to get notifications from my blog as well? Hit the MailChimp API. Is this person on there? Yes or no? That's going to change the message that I send them. And ultimately what I can do is I can construct the email that I want to send to the subscriber or to the donor. Now that's cool, right? So now I've got this email constructed. I wanted to be able to email them from my own account. So not like a SendGrid kind of generic mail mergey kind of thing or a MailChimp thing as I do with my blog updates, but actually send an email from my account. So what I did is there is basically an endpoint that you can create when you create a new Microsoft flow. So I created another flow and I said, look, my trigger here is going to be an HTTPS request. So what happens now is my web job, after it does the processing, makes an HTTPS request to the endpoint on a new Microsoft flow and it declares a schema, the flow declares a schema, which says, look, my request is gonna have, I think I have like a subject and a body and then the email of the donor. All of that gets sent over to the flow. Flow kicks off again, right? And now the flow can go, all right, what I'm gonna do is I'm gonna get this data. I'm gonna wait half an hour because this flow happens so quickly. I actually wanted people to sort of finish the transaction, close down their PayPal, get on with their things, and then it's a bit more of an organic kind of thank you. Wait half an hour so there's a delay action in there, and then I'm going to send the email from my own account. And now when I look at my email sent items, I can see all of the people that I've emailed, and if anyone wants to then have a dialogue, they hit reply and it's actually my normal Outlook account, which is cool. So it's just little things, but I really like the way the composition happens. And it's just sort of broken down into these logical little things, dropping stuff into highly resilient storage queues, making it item potent, integrating it back into the app, being able to go to the flow and sort of see the history. And you get 750 flows a month for free as well. And given that I have two flows for every single one donation, that's kind of cool because it means that I have to get, 375 donations in a month in order to exceed my free allocation. And if I did, it's only $5 for like thousands more, which is pretty good. Now, sunset's coming up, which is nice. Sun's coming up. And I know this looks a little bit glary for those watching the video behind me, so as it comes up a little bit more, I might change position. We'll see how nice it's going to look today. Alrighty, so that was the Microsoft Flow stuff. It's just a cool model, and it's easy to build, and it took me less time to do that than it did to write the blog post. Okay, so that's that one. Now, on to the big thing, and the reason why I'm up so early this morning. You can tell I'm up early the way I'm talking. So, password reuse, we know, is a problem, and it happens a lot, and we have all done it. Let us acknowledge that. In fact, in the blog post that I will be publishing shortly after recording this, before publishing it, I talk about how I've reused passwords in the past as well. I'm reformed, as hopefully you are if you're listening to me. So we know a lot of people reuse passwords. One of the things that happens after a data breach is people will take those passwords, people being evil cyber hackers, they will take the passwords and they'll go, I wonder where else this person used it. Did they use it on Amazon? Did they use it on GitHub? Did they use it wherever? And sure enough, a bunch of people will have. Now what happens is we end up with this situation called credential stuffing. And credential stuffing is just that. Someone saying, let's take all of these passwords, usernames and passwords that people have used in places, see if they work in other places. In order to facilitate the process of credential stuffing, hackers, evil people, create combo lists. And the combo lists are just massive lists of email address, which is normally used as a username, and password pairs. Hundreds of millions of email addresses and password pairs. And then they use dedicated software products that can capture a login request, so capture the HTTP request, recompose it with the logon details from these big combo lists, and just fire them at the website. And in the blog post, I embed a video that someone's recorded, which actually shows how they then route that through multiple proxies, so they have different outbound IP addresses as far as the services they're hitting are concerned. And it's a little bit of a way of sort of randomizing the pattern from which these requests come. So kind of nasty stuff, very effective. Now, there are a couple of really significant combo lists going around. Look, there's lots of combo lists, but two in particular kept popping up time and time and time again. And part of the problem I had was that I couldn't identify where they came from. So there was one in particular, and I've referred to it as anti-public. That's the only title whatsoever on it, anti-public, posted on a Russian site. And I couldn't figure out where it came from. I couldn't attribute it to one source. And it would pop up every now and then, and I'll keep filing it away. It's been popping up for the last few months. And eventually I got to the point where I went, I've got to have a close look at this. Because there's 458 million email addresses in it, unique email addresses. And in many cases, that email address has multiple different passwords against it. So you'd see the same address appear in multiple rows. And I started reaching out to Have I Been Pwned subscribers that were in that set, and I found a bunch of them who I emailed. In fact, I found over 130,000 of them. I emailed about 30 of them and said, look, can you help me verify this? Because I want to know if the credentials are correct. And they all came back and said, yeah, this is a password that I've been using. And many of them said, look, this is quite old, which is the good news because some of them have moved on. But be that as it may, like, this is a legitimate password. And that was really concerning, because now we know that there is active credentials out there being abused in a mass sense. And when I contacted each of these subscribers, I said, okay, well, look, this is sort of your legit password. Do you think this data should be in Have I Been Pwned? Given that I can't tell you where it came from. You know, I can't say it was Adobe or LinkedIn or any of these sort of guys. All I can say is, you've got a username and password that you created at one time and you used somewhere, and now people are abusing it. And everyone came back and emphatically said, yes, that should be out there, right? Like, we should actually have this data out there. Or rather, we should have it searchable in Have I Been Pwned. And that was sort of the impetus. So as of the time of recording, it has almost finished loading the 458 million records in anti-public. There is another one which is a little bit more interesting in other ways. Another one called exploit.in. And like anti-public, this has been floating around for months now. I think it was probably late last year I first saw it. A lot of people send this to me, and I looked at it and went, well, I can't attribute it, right? I can't sort of go, here is where it's come from, and, you know, consequently, people would know whether it'd been exposed. But it was the same sort of deal, but it was larger. In fact, this one I think is about 550-something million. And this was very concerning for a number of reasons. It was concerning for all the same reasons that anti-public is concerning. It's also concerning because I'm in there. And I'm in there with a plain text password that I had used in the past, and it's a shit one. It's a bad one. And I had used that somewhere back in the noughties, so, you know, think back sort of a decade, and I know that I had thrown it at a number of forums, which, look, I mean, I did this thing that many people do. It's like, here's a bunch of stuff I don't really care about. I'll just throw a crap password at that, and then I'll have better passwords for my banking and my email and things like that. So I had this bad password. And what was kind of curious about this is that I had also seen this password appear on the leaked source website. So this is the data breach notification service that got shut down because they were selling your passwords to other people. It's never going to, like, that's just never going to last. not on the clear web, probably not on the dark web either. We've got good precedence of that too. Anywho, so I had seen that before, and it was in a data breach called Vertical Scope. And Vertical Scope creates automated forums. I was signed up to a number of car forums, and I used it there. So that's my skeletons in my closet, my hall of shame. The interesting thing is I had never seen that Vertical Scope data appear anywhere else. And as I say in the blog post, word on the street was that leaked source had paid for this data on the proviso that it was never shared anywhere else because they wanted to commercialize it. And that was kind of curious because now I'm saying, all right, well, we've got this exploit IN thing, which has got a whole heap of data in it that I have never seen anywhere else. And not only that, but about two-thirds of it was not in the other one, the anti-public data breach, or rather anti-public combo list. And consequently, a lot of data in both of those weren't already in Have I Been Pwned. And what I mean by that is a lot of the email addresses weren't already in there. Hundreds and hundreds of millions of email addresses that are new. So long story short, both the anti-public database and the exploit IN database are going to Have I Been Pwned. If people find themselves in there, they're not going to be able to go back to the source of the data and fix their password because we don't know where it came from. What it will do though, is it will give people that moment. And in the blog post, I say it's the oh shit moment. And I see this all the time where people go to the website, go to Have I Been Pwned, search their email address, and they go, oh shit. You know, like I just found myself in there. And the penny drops and they go, now I see why I need to use unique passwords. And it just totally changes their perspective. And that is really, really significant. I cannot overstate how important it is for people to find their data on a site like that and the impact it has on their behavior afterwards. So even though I can't tie that back to one particular website and go, this is where it came from, just the fact that people will find themselves and they know that their data was out there has a big effect on the way they do their password security. So, anti-public will be live by the time you listen to this. 458 million records there. Exploit.in is going to take another 24 hours. I'll be loading it sometime on my Saturday because it is freaking huge. That's those two things. Now, we've actually got Sunrise coming out. I'm just going to move back a little bit because the only other thing that I have to talk about is my sponsor thing. And now we can maybe see, for those of you that have video, how nice it's getting here. Going to be a nice day. You'll notice I'm actually wearing a hoodie as well. So I'm both doing my hacker thing and showing you that it does get just a little bit chilly here, even in the nice parts of the country. Sponsor-wise, I have got NetSparker sponsoring me again this week. And I have used NetSparker's things for many years, so it's really nice to have a sponsor on board who I have been using on my own free volition for some time. So big thanks to those guys. They do some really easy to use, very cool dynamic analysis software where you literally just put in the URL of a website, say go, run, find all my vulnerabilities, only do it to your website, don't do it to other websites. And it comes back with very, very easily consumable information. So that's those guys. I hope this video has worked out okay. I know that the lighting's been a little bit funky. Audio should be just fine for all of those of you listening on the podcast. And I got to go and make a very large amount of data live. Talk to you next week.